Okay, here's the deal. Every once in a while, we have so many interviews that are scheduled that we don't have time during the regular airtime to put them on and air them to you. To you. So we do interview specials where they're just power-packed with information from all different walks of life, all different subject matter, all kinds of stuff. So if you want to get informed about all different kinds of things, this is a place to do it right now, because this is our interview special. All interviews, no waiting.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Ooh, get ready for this one.
Whatever.
I don't know if it's afternoon, evening, or night, or morning. I have no idea. But it is the Ron Van Dam Show. It's an interview special. This is really something. So we're going to have interviews back to back to back to back to back. A lot of backing.
Sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Hi, Brandy, how are you?
I'm doing well, and yourself?
I'm doing very well. Brandy Britton joins us. She's district president of office team and other office team executives in New York City, D.C., and Boston. Thanks for being here today. You can help us out here to, you know, get ahead in our careers when you're working for other people. That, I guess, that really makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. It definitely does. What's interesting about our recent survey is that 86% of workers believe that how you dress impacts your promotability. And more importantly, 80% of managers believe that it also impacts your promotability.
Okay. Well, it's more impactful that the managers believe that, because that makes the difference, all the difference in the world. I'm confused because over the years, I mean, when I was growing up in 1627, you know, you wore a jacket and tie if you were a guy. You wore a perfectly procured dress if you were female. And there were no questions about that. Now there's like casual Wednesdays. I mean, so it's confusing to a lot of workers as to what's acceptable or because everything's become so lax.
Yes, it's definitely more confusing today than maybe it was even 5 years ago.
All right, fine.
But at the end of the day, dressing professionally helps establish credibility.
Mm-hmm.
It can be hard to know what exactly to wear on a day-to-day basis if you want to get promoted.
And I guess, I mean, you start off by going on job interviews, and you kind of have to know what to do there, because then you're not even familiar with their attire or what's acceptable and what isn't acceptable. That's not a question you ask before the interview. So that's, I guess, where it starts.
Certainly, it can start in the interview. A lot of companies today, because the job market is so competitive, they are laxing their dress code. It's a lot more casual than it was. But in the interview process, it's always better to dress a little bit more professionally than maybe the rest of the employees they're dressed.
Mm-hmm.
And you can always call the receptionist or front desk person and ask them what the dress code is in advance of your interview, so that you're on point for that meeting.
You know, it's difficult because even if there is a dress code and you come real close to the line where you're kind of getting close to where that dress code is questionable, I mean, even there, if you're within the guidelines, you can be on the wrong side.
Yes, you can. And you want to always remember a couple of things. If you wore it to bed, probably shouldn't wear that to work. Or if you'd be embarrassed for your grandmother to see you in your outfit, then you probably shouldn't wear it to work either. But it's one of those things where if you question it, you're not quite sure, it's probably not a good idea.
Yeah. Are the guidelines more stringent for men or for women? Does it really, I mean, there are more possibilities of what a woman can wear sometimes.
That makes it more difficult.
Yes, it does.
When you have too many options, the old suit and tie is much easier, frankly, because you don't have to think too much.
Right.
But when there's too many options out there, it makes it more difficult for people to figure out what to wear.
So what do we do? I guess it depends on the company and the company atmosphere. But again, you can get a manager or a superior that might even not even, you know, might find something too conservative, something not too conservative. It's just like, it's like, it's hard to please people.
It is. Well, it's always best to be familiar with your company's dress code. Mm-hmm. Usually they have a list of things to wear, things not to wear, and look around, see what your manager is wearing, see what everyone else is wearing, and then try to benchmark yourself towards that.
I guess that always does help to see what does work and go with that. It doesn't hurt to do that.
No, it doesn't. And again, if you're in that phase where you want to be promoted or you're looking for that next level position, just be aware that how you are viewed is going to be what determines potentially how likely you are to be considered for a leadership role.
Yeah. Also, if you wear the same clothes every day, people will start to talk about you behind your back. That's the problem when you're working. People talk behind your back if you're not careful. Part of the survey is very interesting to me as to how long it takes a man to prepare to dress for work and how long it takes for a woman to prepare.
Yes. So average time to pick out an outfit is 11 minutes. Men actually spend more time than women with spending 12
really?
Minutes per day picking out an outfit. And I suspect some of that is the woman is thinking about what outfit she is going to wear prior to even getting to her closet.
Mm-hmm.
And men often, as soon as they open up the closet door, that's when they start to think about it.
I think it's a win-win when you dress properly, because when you're dressed well, you kind of feel better about yourself, too. I mean, I don't know if you get into the psychology of it, but sometimes people perform better, but the people say, no, the more comfortable I am in my dressing, then the better job I can do. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, because I agree. I like to personally dress up. It makes me feel like I'm at work.
Yes.
There's a differentiation.
Yes.
But more employees today actually prefer a more casual dress code, and they say that makes them feel more comfortable, thus more productive. But, I think it depends on each person, and again, where do you see yourself? If you want to get promoted, dress a notch above everyone else.
I understand that certain things that people used to wear 5 years ago are now becoming not acceptable, kind of like a turn of what I would expect.
Yeah, well, things that are more acceptable today than 5 years ago are jeans, tennis shoes, leggings. So those are always comfortable outfits. But the big one that is a do not wear is our tank tops for both men and women. And I think that comes to just a little bit too much skin and a little too distracting in the office.
Yeah, and a little bit of I don't care, to be honest with you, is what that would project to me. Like, I'll dress the way I want, that's your problem kind of thing. And that doesn't work either. Okay. There's a lot to talk about. And actually, oddly enough, some people might consider it to be fairly superficial. It's kind of not. It's a psychology deal. And it does affect your career, so, why not? Where do I go for more information?
OfficeTeam.com, and we have a number of surveys that we do on workplace trends. And since we're approaching the summer months, how you dress is even more critical to pay attention when it's super hot outside.
True, true. Hey, great talking to you, Brandy. Thank you so much for the information today. And one more time, the place to go?
OfficeTeam.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Ron, thank you so much. Have a good one.
Take care. Bye-bye. Danae Dumian joins us now. She's principal of Tailored Solutions for Edward Jones. And we're talking about some tips and techniques to save for college. And I understand you've done some surveys recently, which brought up some interesting things.
Yeah, so we did our seventh annual survey regarding 529 plans. So what we found is that only a third of Americans actually know what a 529 plan is. So that's pretty disappointing considering the headlines that we see around the rising cost of college education and just the importance of a college education overall. So, you know, that was a little bit surprising and disappointing that that number was so low, which is one of the reasons we do the survey is just to make sure that, you know, that we're getting that word out there.
Was the survey done among college kids and parents that were entering that phase of life, or was it done to everybody, including 83-year-olds?
Yes, yeah, so it was very broad, and what we found was that what was interesting about that is that the number actually was lower when we looked at the individuals with children under the age of 13, and that's really when you really need to start saving is, you know, when the kids are younger. So that number was actually lower for parents with young kids.
Huh. Why is it such a low percentage of people that even plan to get financial aid or state or federal aid? That's amazingly low.
It really is. I mean, when we think about, I think part of it's just procrastination, right? And people don't realize how expensive college really is. So they think, oh, well, we'll just take it out of our savings account, or, you know, we'll just pay for it. We'll figure it out when we get there. We'll take money out of our 401k plans. And there are better ways to save for college education. It's just, I think it just can be overwhelming for some families.
Yeah, I mean, even it's interesting from what I know, it's maybe a little bit easier to get into state colleges, for example, but it's also now considerably more expensive also. So maybe it's a shock to parents and students who all of a sudden say, oh, I didn't know it was this much. I thought it was this much last time I checked into it. But now, wow.
Right.
Yeah.
Certainly. And I think, too, you know, if you think about scholarships, of course, all of our kids are smart enough to get, you know, they're all above average, right?
Yeah.
I know my kids are. Of course, they're going to get scholarships. But the reality is that you can't bank on that. And a 529 college savings plan is one of the best ways that anybody can save for a college education. Grandparents, parents, aunts, uncles, anybody can put money into a 529 college savings plan.
Well, the first thing is don't have a lot of kids. I mean, but that has nothing to do with it because it's an expensive venture. And secondly, I guess the earlier you start saving, the better off you are because this money has a chance to grow.
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. Just like any other savings kind of account, you know, the investments grow as quickly as the investments grow. And then you can take the money out tax-free out of a 529 plan, which is unlike most other savings accounts.
So the fact that most people don't know about it is obviously because, as you say, there are many reasons, procrastination, they haven't checked into it until the time comes, that kind of thing. But there are experts who can actually advise them as to what the better road would be for their particular circumstance.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the benefits of having a financial advisor is they can help. They can help you navigate through that. They can help you kind of balance whether, you know, you're going to be saving for college plus saving for your own retirement and plus saving for, you know, emergency funds. So, you know, a financial advisor is well equipped to do that. You know, Edward Jones has about 16,000 financial advisors and 13,000 offices all across the country, and that's what we're equipped to do.
Who is this guy, Edward Jones? Is it a real person?
Edward Jones was, yes.
Yeah.
He was the founder of our firm.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. Yeah, I figure they didn't just pick a name out of the hat. That probably is what it is.
That's right.
Okay, fine. That has nothing to do with talking about. I was just curious at one point. You know, it's interesting, even though the economy is supposedly really wonderful, It doesn't mean that people save accordingly. It just means that they might spend that money a little bit more than usual, go on more vacations,
right, et
cetera. But it is a great opportunity, economy-wise, if you do have a job, to really start thinking about the future.
Absolutely. I mean, it might take a little bit of discipline, right, as it always does.
Well, everything does.
But yeah, saving that money early can pay off very well,
yes,
especially if you have, you know, if your family values a college education, there's no reason why, you know, putting a little bit of money away on a monthly basis, it's not that difficult.
Right.
And the 529 plans are open to anybody.
Yeah, I mean, it should. I mean, here's the way I look at it. You do the thing for college, for the kid, and then at the same time, or like right after the college, you continue putting stuff away for retirement. I mean, it's not just college. I know we're getting beyond the subject matter, but this is like a lifelong discipline, isn't it, for all different phases of life?
It certainly is. I mean, you know, Social Security is probably not going to fund everyone's full retirement.
You can't live on that, no.
You know, that's why we have 401k plans and individual retirement accounts. That's why those were created, was so that, you know, Americans can take control of their mm-hmm. of their finances all the way around. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that that schools, public schools, who advise the kids on upcoming college careers, do you think that they're up on financing enough?
So if you're talking about like high school guidance counselors and those kinds of folks, they're probably aware, but they're certainly not digging into the family's finances.
Right.
So it really is the family's responsibility mm-hmm. to figure out how they're going to pay for college, whether it's hopefully saving early and saving often and asking grandparents and aunts and uncles to contribute during birthdays and that sort of thing to their 529 college savings accounts. But, you know, the whole financial aid, it's complicated, and not everyone can get financial aid. So, you know, you can't make any assumptions saving for college,
right, right.
Except for the fact that you can assume that it's going to be very expensive one way or the other.
Correct. Correct. It's not just, I mean, you may have to stay at the, on location. It's the courses. It's like, there's a lot of different phases to it. So yeah. And
absolutely.
if you're lucky enough to have a brilliant child who gets scholarships and aid and all that kind of thing, then yeah, you roll it into your retirement deal and there you go. Okay. I think the main thing is to make people aware that there are various financial programs that do help in all these corridors, and that you need a financial expert sometimes, usually, to be able to discern which ones are the best road for you.
That's right. You're right on.
That's what I do for a living. I'm right on all the time. Okay.
It's a good place to be.
Yes, but I don't lend money out, so I'm good. All right. How do I get more information about this?
So I would start with edwardjones.com. You can get really good resources there, good information, and you can search for a local financial advisor. There's also some good information on collegesavings.com.
Okay. And to sit down with an advisor and do a consultation, what's involved? No charge? Charge? What do I do?
It depends on the financial advisor at Edward
mm-hmm.
Jones. They'll visit with you, you know, complimentary, and just make sure that it's a good fit,
mm-hmm.
And make sure that everybody's on the same page. And it's a great place to start.
Okay, so it doesn't cost anything to inquire.
That's right.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks a lot, Ron.
All right, you take care. Bye bye. Laura Adams is a personal finance expert. You're just the kind of person I need around this time. Glad you're here. Okay. It's time for a financial checkup, which is like going to a doctor's office annually, which you should do, and checking up your financial situation. And it's the summer. Will there be certain checkups that I need during the summer?
Absolutely. This is a really great time to do it. And we know that things are going pretty well with the financial markets and the economy. which is wonderful, but we find that Americans are still pretty financially fragile. According to a recent study by employee benefits company Unum, they found that about 50% of households have less than $1,000 in savings.
Sure.
That's way too little, right? And unfortunately, about half of households are also saying they're feeling very anxious about their financial situation. So the only way to combat that is to take a hard look at it. So this is a great time to do it. Maybe you're going into the summer with a little extra time to relax and think about it. Make sure you're on track for the rest of the year. Maybe you set some goals at the beginning of the year, and we need to make sure that we're on track to meet them. So one of the key ways is to definitely protect your savings. So having some emergency money set aside is just key. And I always advise people to have at least 3 to 6 months worth of savings on hand. And a lot of people say, wow, that's a lot. And I agree, it is a lot. And if you are feeling that that's just overwhelming and it's an insurmountable goal, start small. You know, we just all have to start from somewhere. So putting aside a small amount on a regular basis will allow you to accumulate some savings over time. And once you've got those savings, you feel so much better about your ability to handle a job loss, or perhaps you've got business income that could dry up, or any unexpected emergency. So that's what it's for. And we also want people to think about insurance. Insurance is actually a very easy way to protect your financial stability. So one of the most important policies is disability. Another is accident coverage. So we don't think about our ability to earn an income as being an asset, but it actually is. You know, you think about your house or your car as being an asset, but your ability to earn an income is really important, and that's what disability is for. Unfortunately, 1 in 4 Americans will become disabled at some point during their working career for at least 3 months. And think about how you're going to pay everyday living expenses during that time. It would be pretty tough for most Americans who don't even have $1,000 in savings. So disability can replace about 60% of your salary, and this is something that is pretty cheap, too. The cost is less than $1 a day. So that's a very inexpensive way to kind of shore up your financial security. And accident coverage is another policy. Many people are not familiar with this one, but it will cover out-of-pocket expenses that your health insurance may not cover. So let's say you have an accident. You know, maybe you are doing something like cleaning and doing chores around the house. You have an accident. You go to the emergency room. You're probably going to have some pretty high out-of-pocket costs due to health insurance just typically being a high deductible, and more Americans are choosing high deductible plans. So accident insurance will pay those out-of-pocket expenses not covered by your health care. So that's a key way that you can really, you know, have a lot of security for any kind of unforeseen event, whether it's related to your income or related to an accident or injury.
Okay. Where do I get more information?
Yeah, a great way to learn more is unum.com/benefits. They have a fantastic page with a lot more about disability and accident policies, plus many other types of financial products that consumers should consider to protect their financial security.
Well, great. This has been an easy interview. I didn't have to say a word. This is pretty cool.
Ron, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Laura. Bye-bye. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Ron. How are you?
Good to talk to you again. Sharon Miller is the head of small business with Bank of America, as we all know by now. Sharon, I know that surveys was taken recently based on the recent tax reform.
Well, it was. We survey our small business owners twice per year to understand how they're feeling about the economy, their revenue outlook, and just overall how they're doing in their local communities. And this was the highest level of optimism we have seen in our small business owner survey since 2015. And so the last time you and I talked, Ron, it was improved, and folks were feeling good about the prospects of their growth in the economy. And one area that they pointed to that was fueling this optimism was tax reform. You know, they also were very optimistic because, look, I mean, the economy and the overall health of the national economy is strong. And, you know, the stock market, although it's, you know, we've seen some volatility, we continue to see improvements across the national footprint. And so, you know, there were a lot of different reasons and that business owners cited, and tax reform was one of those. And certainly for those that it was meaningful, they did tell us it was a game changer for their business.
It was a game changer for their own personal pocket, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yes, and also it doesn't affect volatility. Were there other reasons besides tax reform? Yes, the stock market is good, the economy is good, but at the same time, the tax reform can cause national debt, and that can make things unstable. So they maybe don't understand that. They maybe only understand the immediate results of it.
Right. I mean, and I think that that you're right. I mean, over the long term, we'll see of how this, you know, question and how small business owners are looking and viewing their own personal situation. But I would tell you that, you know, that they're feeling positive. They believe that they will use, you know, this optimism and their growth expectations for their business. What they're telling us is, look, they're going to, you know, either hire more employees, they may, you know, invest in technology for their business. And so these are some of the conversations. So regardless of, you know, longer term, when business owners are feeling optimistic, they are, you know, buying more goods and services, or they're getting, you know, they're investing in other areas so that they can grow and flourish and attract the right employees to their company. Because, you know, as you know, Ron, the most important, you know, thing that we can employ are people. And so in this economy, with the national economy being so strong and the full employment out there, there is a war for talent. And so small business owners have to be very mindful of the benefits there. You know, leveraging to attract the right employees, whether that be healthcare, the right retirement plan so that employees can plan for their future. So these are all, you know, big issues and complex needs of small business owners and entrepreneurs. And really, I mean, I hear from a lot of business owners, hey, all I want to do is run my business. I didn't realize there was so much other stuff administration-wise that I have to do. And so that's where having a partner and someone like Bank of America that can help small business owners navigate this complexity is so critical.
Yes, it is. There is considerable complexity, and you do need a business partner. And depending on, I mean, our definition of small business actually kind of runs a really large gamut here. It can be anybody who is self-employed, making $100,000, or I believe, what's the threshold of small business on the other end? About 10 million?
Well, you know, we consider, you know, a small business from anywhere up to 100 employees.
Yes.
And when you think about the revenue, it's up to 5 million in revenue.
Okay.
So those are the key areas of focus for our survey,
right,
and for our small business business advantage within Bank of America that we focus. And
right,
so we have a very, very deep understanding. We have 3.1 million small business clients across the United States that trust Bank of America with their business, and they put confidence in us to be able to help them navigate and provide advice and guidance. And so it is very complex, small, large. There are concerns, and they run the gamut.
Well, it's true that when you run a small business, you do need to constantly invest into your business. It isn't just, okay, now I've started it and that's fine. There's constant reinvestment and constant growing in order to build your business, and that's where you do need a business partner.
You do. And, you know, and you've got to continually understand what's happening, because, you know, you can't just have one business plan and say, okay, you know, I want to, you know, open a restaurant and here's what I'm going to do. You got to constantly be evaluating what's happening real time. Who's coming into your restaurant? What are you serving? What's going well? What are clients telling you? I mean, all this comes into play. So you can't stay stagnant. You've got to be flexible, and you got to, you know, make adjustments, because, you know, to be so stuck in one way, because that's you got to be flexible and listen to your clients.
Oh, yes. Well, yeah, times have changed. I remember when I started my small business, you took out a fairly large Yellow Pages ad and you put a sign out front that said, you know, special this week, and you pretty much had your business. It wasn't that involved. Now you need cybersecurity. You have to invest in social media. There's a whole digital world. It's extremely complicated. And it's totally
it absolutely
different.
Absolutely, the Internet of Things. I mean, what is that, right?
Yeah,
because
I know.
It's just,
yeah.
I mean, you know, everything is it's there's so much. I mean, it's just like for business. I mean, I have two young kids, and I think, gosh, the things that they know today and that they're learning about is it's just unbelievable. Yeah. And the world is just transformed, and small business owners have to keep up, and that's what we're here to help them do.
It's funny. Do you ever think that maybe you should hire business owners should hire their kids to do the social media work for them, because it's kind of true.
Oh my gosh, yes. I mean, look, I totally agree. You know what? A lot of times I have a problem on my phone. I'm like, wait, Ryan, come here. Can you come see? Come look at this. Like, what do I need to do? Because they know, right? My son is 12.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, they know so much that, you know, still I you know, have trouble to figure out. So yeah, it absolutely, and they know what is, the trends and what people are looking. I mean, it is just fascinating. And I mean, wow, I admire how much our children know now, and how much entrepreneurs have to know to keep up with this ever-changing landscape we operate in.
Yes, and then there's always a competition besides even your own business building. So yeah, you do need a partner, and it's good that industries and companies like yourselves do supply that, because you've been, you know, these companies have been doing this forever, really.
We have for over 200 years. We've been helping clients, and now our survey. We just started our survey in 2012, but you know, we've been helping clients for 200 years, and we know, and we are there to help. And look, ourselves, we adapt. Erica, right? Just came out. In fact, there was an article this morning in Barlow's on, you know, Erica for small business, the virtual assistant. Who would have thought? Yeah. You know, you have to have a virtual assistant to help with banking,
oh, you do.
But you do. And the artificial intelligence out there that we provide our clients is second to none. And you know, we're there to help entrepreneurs think ahead and understand what they need to do as they're navigating this complex world.
Well, yes, part of that. I mean, I you know, when you take a survey like this, the economy is good, but it can change on a dime. And I think that's also part of what an entrepreneur and a business owner should also know in the back of their mind, that this does not go on forever at this pace, and that's also a smart business move. So you have to weigh both sides of it as a smart business owner. I mean, I'm glad that they responded this way, but in the back of their minds, they should say, "Nah, you got to put something behind here just in case, because the just in case is possible."
Yeah, you got to plan for the rainy day, right?
Yeah,
expect the unexpected.
Oh, Sharon, it can rain. It can rain, Sharon.
Okay. Oh yeah, and when it rains, it pours.
It pours. All right. Where do we get more information?
You can go to bankofamerica.com. /small business, and in there you can see the report, our latest report that was just released for the spring 2018, and then also just lots of other information for entrepreneurs, whether you're just starting your business or you've been in business 100 years.
Okay.
We have a ton of information there and insights.
Great. Good to talk to you again.
Great to talk to you, Ron. Thanks for
Take
having
care.
Me.
Bye-bye. Mihal Inskar joins us now, Vice President of Marketing for Corporate Services at Sodexo. Talked to them before. You're always taking surveys over there at that company and finding out what's going on, apparently.
Yes, we do, indeed.
And what is the latest information about the workplace reality?
Well, we've actually just published a workplace trend, and we're looking really around the Gen Z that are up and coming in our workforce.
Okay, I don't even know what that is. A Gen Z.
Well, there's actually 60 million of them in the U.S. Roughly around 26% of our working population, and they are born between 1995 and 2012. Uh-huh. And I have two of them living at home still.
I see. Okay. All right. But you don't call them by that name, apparently. Okay.
Only when they don't behave.
Okay. So why does Sodexo, why are they so into keeping their fingers on the pulse of society here?
Well, they're actually very very interesting as they come in the workplace, because they bring a very interesting diversity. The way they look at life, the way they look at work life, for them, the workplace is actually sort of a third space, so it's between not quite home, but also not quite the traditional workplace environment that we're used to seeing. So they're looking for a real interaction opportunity at work, and they want to live and they want to really experience work in a very different way that we're used to seeing in the traditional way.
What is the action and the reaction? In other words, is it the employees that cause change, or is it the companies that dictate what that change is, if there's going to be any? How do the two meet?
Actually, I mean, the employers really, if they want to make sure that their workforce is diverse, if they want to be able to attract this talent, then they need to pay attention and they need to adapt their workplace environment so that it's more inclusive to the different generations coming and being in the workplace. So they absolutely need to make sure that they stay attentive to create environments where everyone brings their best self to work. And that's what Sodexo is really interested about, because we look at, you know, what can we do through the services that we provide with our clients to ensure that the quality of life of every individual is really catered and looked after. So whether it's having very comfortable and interactive workplace environments or amenities, this is important for employers so that they are able to attract and retain the best talent.
Yeah, because I mean, I know what I've noticed is over the years that companies, no matter how well they're doing, are not going to hire tons of people anymore. They're going to hire only a select number of people that do an incredible job. And to find those people, you got to kind of cater to those people to make them want to work there, because you're not going to afford having like an overpopulated workforce anymore.
Well, I mean, there's still a lot of jobs out there. We're still creating, workplace environments, and we still need to hire. And there's a generation that's actually retiring, so it's a cycle that's constantly happening. Thing is, though, there is a cost to hiring, so we invest a lot in when we bring people in the workplace, and so we want to make sure that once we get them in, we keep them, because training people is expensive, and ensuring that they're motivated and they're in a workplace environment that really caters to what they bring in their emotional intelligence and their physical well-being. You want to make sure that you pay attention to that.
Well, you're right. They are an investment, and you have to keep them there, because if the economy is really good and there's a lot of jobs around, that means your people can skip on you for something better if you don't treat them respectfully and make them happy where they are. So, yeah, it is a meeting of the minds kind of on both ends.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we look at these trends to help companies ensure that when they look at planning their workplace environments and look at their human capital management, that they're really paying attention to those key points.
Good deal. How do we find out more about this?
Well, you can go on to, we have a SodexoInsights.com and that people can gravitate to, and they can download the copy of the 2018 Workplace Trends Report and read more about it. And hopefully if they have any questions, they can actually also go on our Facebook page or on Twitter, and we will welcome all their comments and insight.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Have a fantastic day.
Thank you. Bye-bye. That's more information anybody could possibly ever want. So there you go, man. There you have it. It's time for me to leave. Time for you to go. I'll be back with another show coming up really quickly. Until then, I wish you peace.